Well, guys, you know, Mother's Day is that time when all the guys get thrown under the bus, and we got to celebrate mom. So we want to, again, celebrate all of the challenges of, again, being a mom or being a woman in our culture. And, again, just want to honor you this morning. Well, that video did encapsulate some of the challenges, just some of the busyness, some of the craziness, some of the cliches that we find ourselves saying. And we say, my parents said that. I can't believe it's coming out of my mouth. But this morning, what I'd like to do is I'd like us to explore some lessons that we can learn from Jesus' mom. And we get to hear around Christmas time about Jesus' mom and what she did. But this morning, what I'd like to do is look at a woman's character, and specifically God's character, through the life of Mary, Jesus' mom. And did she do everything right? Maybe we can relate to some things she did right. Maybe we can relate to some things that she made some mistakes on as well. But what I'd like to do this morning is look at three moments in her life. And in these three moments, we'd like to discover what God is like, what God does, and what God offers through these three moments. We'll actually sneak two into that second moment, but three different moments of Mary's life. What is God like? What is his character like? What does God do? What's God doing in the world today? And lastly, what does God offer to us? If you want to follow along in your notes or on the screen behind me, you can. Let's look at this first moment in Mary's life, this question, who God is. I had a great email exchange a couple weeks ago. Someone here at Horizon was asking some great questions. About God, what is God like? You know, is God an equation? Is God watching from a distance? Is God angry at me? Are all religions basically the same road leading up to the same path? How can you really take the Bible literally or true? Do you take that case? And they're asking me questions about that. Does God want to be involved in my life? Does God care about the little things in life? We just had this great email exchange back and forth. It reminded me why I love the fact that Horizon, we're yours to explore. Because we all have questions. We all have questions in a journey, in our spiritual journey that we're on. And if we can't ask those questions, we're not going to get those answers. And what question is more pivotal? What question is more important than this one? Who is God? What is God like? In this first moment in Mary's life, we get to experience two revolutionary ideas in discovering what God is like. Let me read the passage for you. Usually we hear it around Christmas time, but in this first moment, it's the 6th month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary. And having come in, the angel said to her, "Rejoice, highly favored one. The Lord is with you." This idea, the Lord is with you, was a very pivotal idea. The fact that the God, the maker of the universe, whoever he was and wherever he was, he could actually be up close and personal. That God can be with us. And what the angel came to deliver is to say, let me tell you what God is like. You may have heard that he's at a distance and he's unrelated, that he's wound up the universe and said, good luck to you. But I want you to know that God is personal. He's a person. The good news is if he's a person, you can know him. Now, there are many great truths in lots of different philosophies, in lots of different religions. But it's interesting, in America in particular, we really want, and I'm not sure exactly why, but we really want all religions to say the same thing. And they don't. Because you begin to study this question, who is God, different philosophies and different religions come to very different conclusions. Some philosophies have God, again, as an equation. Well, equation isn't something you can know, it's something you can figure out. But a person is someone who can be with you, comfort to you, talk to you, be near you, personal. Some religions, God is at a distance, and you can know his decrees. You can follow his will. I had a great opportunity to read the Quran last summer, and just really, really enjoyed reading through the Quran. And as I read it, I saw a lot of similarities, and I saw a lot of differences. Because when I looked at the Quran, God is holy, and he's good, and he's gracious. But God isn't a father. In fact, it says very clearly in the Quran that God doesn't have sons or daughters. God isn't a father. God is so up in the sky that you can't know him as a friend. Great things about God. I learned a lot about it. But when Christianity shows up, when the angel shows up, he says, what I'm talking about is very different from what you've heard before. The God I'm describing is one who is personal. And he wants to be personally involved in your life. And not only that, there's another interesting thing in this moment we just have. Is God is not only personal, he's involved. Look what it says here. It says, Gabriel was sent by God. He was sent by God. Now, why is that a big deal? Because many times, again, if you've studied comparative religion, many religions are about trying to get to God. I need to work hard enough, pray long enough, be good enough, and maybe I can work my way up to God. The story here is that God didn't wait for us to come to Him. No. What God is like is He sent. He was the initiator. He was the one who came to us. God wants to be involved in our life. The Bible describes a God who's not a theory or an equation. He is a person. And He wants to be involved in your life and my life as a Father. A perfect, loving, heavenly Father. I was talking to a lady a few weeks ago here at Horizon. And she was telling me about her relationship with her parents. And she was in her 50s and just loved her parents. Had a great relationship with her mom and her dad. But over the years, as she began to go through taking care of her parents as they're on their deathbed and walking through all the challenges of care and, you know, what do you do, and leaving them in a home and watching them go from hospice to hospice care, she shared with me that she went to this conference a few weeks ago. And she realized that she never got a chance to say some of the things she wanted to say to her dad before he passed away. And her dad, who's, again, my grandfather was a great man. And many of us who came from, have grandparents or parents in other generations, they weren't as verbal and they were as expressive. And her father wasn't as well. She went to this conference and got a chance for somebody to stand in for her dad. And she said how meaningful it was for her to be able to share her love and concern for her father. And to have this man standing in as her father turn to her and say, I want you to know the day you were born was one of the happiest days of my life. I want you to know how much I love you and care for you. I want you to know how much you mean to me. And at 50 years old, she says she's in tears because there's something deeply rooted in us that wants the blessing, the love, the acceptance of a person, a heavenly Father. In fact, if you study much psychology, you'll know that Erickson, in his study of social psychological development, says that the foundation of all development in our life is this first stage, the idea of trust. That as kids begin to understand how to trust a person, how to trust their parents, how to trust their caregivers, that will be the foundation, that I can trust that my parents are personally involved in my life, and I can trust that they have my good at heart. He said that foundation will lead to, as they grow in elementary school, in elementary ages, to autonomy versus self-doubt, initiative versus guilt. In their teenage years, the ability to understand competence versus inferiority, identity versus role confusion. And then into midlife and beyond that, some of the major stages of development will come back to this idea. Can I trust my parents as people who were involved? As I get the second half of life and I look at issues like intimacy versus isolationism, as I look to retirement, I look at generativity. How can I can make a difference with my second half of life versus stagnation? And integrity versus despair as I approach the end of my life. Erickson discovered that at the core, the foundation of all this development was an understanding that we could trust people in our lives. Where did that idea of being hardwired come from? The Bible would suggest that deep in our core, we all need to know a God who is a person who's not just watching from a distance, but is highly involved. And this is what we discover in this first moment. God is with us, and God is the initiator. And what's interesting is that Mary modeled that care. Mary modeled that. In other words, as parents, we can say, if God is a person, and He is involved, then as a mom and as a dad, I can be a person, not just the rules, not just a paycheck, not just a taxi driver. I can be personally involved in my kid's life. And many of us are doing that, aren't we? I love how Mary did. I mean, here she is. She wraps him up in swaddling clothes. Now, I don't know if you can relate to this, but as a dad, whenever I'm in charge of taking care of the kids, it didn't matter if they were toddlers or now that they're heading toward middle school. What's amazing is my wife always knows that we're going to have a good time while she's gone. But I'm going to forget things like, did you remember to get their coat on? The coat? No, I didn't think about a coat. I don't remember to wrap them up in swaddling clothes. I don't remember to put coats on. Sometimes we even forget to eat. You ever relate to that? We're having such a good time. We're out playing cards. We're out doing whatever. We forgot to eat. And there's something about moms. Moms remember things that guys, we don't even have on our radar. We're not even thinking about stuff like dish towels, different sizes and how they're folded and all that stuff. I can't even compute it all. And yet here is Mary. And she is wrapping him with swaddling clothes. She's doing this care and concern and motherly love that springs from her view of God. I love what it says here. She wraps him in swaddling clothes and she laid him in a manger. Isn't that one thing that moms are so good at? I mean, she takes this feed trough and turns it into a crib. Moms have this ability to take ordinary objects and make them extraordinary. I mean, to take a manger and turn it into a crib. To take a house and turn it into a home. Isn't that what we love about our wives? Isn't that what we love about our own parents and our grandparents? That many of them, and when it wasn't there, there's this thing like it shouldn't be this way. Because we sense that it ought to be personal and it ought to be involved. In fact, I remember when I was in my 20s, my mom, we first had our first daughter. Maybe you have kids that are heading off to college and maybe they're into the about to have a kid phase. One thing my mom did is she used to send us a care package. It was about a box about so big, so tall, so long, around December 1st. And it would have 30 different gifts. I mean, she went to the dollar store or whatever. But 30 different gifts. And even though we were 13 miles apart as a grandmother, my kids every day would get a chance to go to, and they were all labeled, number one, number two, and whatever day of the month it was in December, they would open it up, and oh, they got this gift. And, you know, we threw it away about 10 days later because it was just all junk. But, you know, my kids, oh, my mom listens to CD. I erased that from the tape. But you know what she did? And this is true as during the adolescent stages, the teenage stages, and even into my adult life. My mom had this ability. Gather us all together when we're living all over the country. Let's go on a cruise together. And she forced us to put it on our calendar 2 years in advance because she wanted to take things that were ordinary and make them extraordinary. We used to have unbirthday parties growing up. She would make excuses to have a birthday party. She would take this ordinary day and say, let's make it somebody's unbirthday party. And we'd celebrate and have cake. There's always room for cake, isn't there? To have birthday parties. When this moment we discover who God is and we see Mary modeling it, that God is a person and he is involved in our life. Well, the second moment we discover something very interesting. We begin to ask the question, well, if that's who God is, if he's a person and he's involved, then what does God do? What does he do? And we see Mary and Joseph taking little baby Jesus and doing exactly what you saw at the beginning of the service, dedicating their son Jesus to God. They say, we want to take our son and we want to dedicate him with other people who want to be involved in their life and say, we want to raise him in such a way that he can continue to develop in his faith. So really the reason we do child dedication around here is because of this next moment. This is exactly what Mary and Joseph did. They took Jesus and they brought him to be dedicated. Let's read the passage together. It says, now in the days of her purification according to the law of Moses was completed, they, Mary and Joseph, brought him, Jesus, to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him according to the custom of the law, Simeon took him up in his arms and blessed God and said, Lord, now you're letting your servant depart in peace. Look at how he's talking. He's talking to God like a friend, like God the person. God, thanks so much. Now I get to depart in peace. What is he so happy about? According to your word, for my eyes have seen your salvation. So here's Mary and Joseph coming to dedicate their child. And here's Simeon, who's been waiting for years. He's probably in his 80s or 90s at this point. He's waiting to see what God's going to do. And he says, now I have seen your salvation. Now, I don't know if you've come across that word. I've come across a word that hasn't always been good. It seems like somebody's always trying to save you. Are you saved? You need to get saved. And people are trying to push their religion on you. It just, you know, can be nauseating at times. So what does that word mean? That he has seen your salvation. Well, it points to what God's all about. The word salvation means deliverance. God delivers. God's in the delivery business. God is here to deliver us. Well, what does that mean? Well, I think when most of us look in the mirror, or most of us look honestly and reflect on our own life and begin to contemplate our own life, we begin to realize that we got some areas that need some help. I need to be delivered from bad habits. I need to be delivered from my pride. I don't want to be arrogant. I don't want to be proud. I can see the devastation it's causing in my life. I need to be delivered from that. I know what I ought to do. I'm just not doing it. I need to be delivered. I need to be forgiven. And this is what God does. This personal, involved God sees us stuck in our bad habits, stuck in our pride, stuck in our selfishness at times, and says, I want to help deliver you or forgive you for that. Like I was in a small group recently here at Horizon and had one of the moms that said, you know what, look, kids, as they continue to grow, especially in the middle school and high school years, they're like little mirrors. You get to see all of your own idiosyncrasies in them. You get to see all of your bad habits in them. And if you're like me, you can rationalize your own. Oh, you know, it's not that big a deal. You don't understand the circumstances. When your kids do it, you're like, that is so irritating. And then you're thinking, or your spouse is thinking, that's exactly what you do. You begin to see
in your kids all the things that you need to be delivered to. It's easier to see what they need to be delivered from than what you need to be delivered from, isn't it? But God says, I've come to deliver you. I've come to forgive you. That's what I'm all about. I remember when I was in high school, I had a pair of Reebok tennis shoes that I loved. And this pair of tennis shoes I loved so much, but the problem was my feet were growing, and they're size 13 by the time I was a junior, and I kept growing out of my shoes. Well, my mom wanted to deliver me from my shoes because she thought they were worn out. No, no, no. You see, my dad had a bandsaw in the workshop in our basement. So I took my shoes off, and I ran them through the bandsaw. Cut that thing off, cut both of them off, and I got to wear those things for another 6 months. Now, granted, my toes were pointed out, but you know what? I love these shoes. These were comfortable shoes. You don't throw those shoes away. I got a little bit more wear and tear out of them. My mom kept saying, we got to be delivered from that. You look ridiculous. I don't look ridiculous, Mom. I look cool in this. Don't you have things that your kids are doing? You're thinking, I'm trying to help you. I love you. I'm trying to help you here. Well, one day, I came home from school, and somebody had been in my closet. And somebody delivered me from my Reeboks. Threw them away, and it's become part of Hovind folklore from this point on as to exactly who it was and how it happened and who really knew at what time. But God isn't like that. God's not going to come into your closet. God's not going to poke around your life. God may say, you got some things in your life that they're smelly, they're old, they're stinky, they're ridiculous, they're hurting you, they're hurting the people around you, but I'm not going to go in your closet. But if you come to the point you say, wow, I need help. I need to be delivered from this. I need you to get rid of these and get me a new pair. God said he will step right in and he will deliver you. And it's as simple as talking to him as a person. God, could you help me? Could you forgive me? Could you, and this is so powerful, could you separate me from my sins? And that's what deliverance is. Yeah, the things you're doing are bad. They're really bad. But I will separate you from them so that when I see you, you are clean and washed and forgiven and have peace. Which goes to the question, God delivers us from what? Well, we see that in this next moment. Jesus is now 12. I often wonder in reading the Bible, they don't mention his teenage years at all. Now, I'm not saying he did anything wrong, but isn't it suspicious that Jesus' teenage years aren't mentioned at all in the Bible? How did they handle it? What went on there? But we do get him as a preteen. He's 12. Mary and Joseph are on their way. They come in, and Jesus is hanging out with the teachers of the law at the time, and they take off, and families would often caravan together. And as they were taking off, they didn't have Jesus. You ever lost your kids? I've done that a couple times. I'm like, I can't call my wife. I got to find them. I got to find them. They're in Walmart somewhere. I got to find them. Well, they lost Jesus. So if you've ever lost your son or lost your daughter, Mary did too. All right? And often I think we say, boy, I wish I could be like somebody else. Well, Mary made lots of mistakes. And here's one example of a mistake she made. The boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. Now, so it was that after 3 days, 3 days before they realized he was gone, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. So when they saw him, they see Jesus. He's been gone for 3 days. Mary, Jesus' mom, turns to him and says, son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. Anxiously worry. In other words, she comes and says, Jesus, you made mommy mad. Jesus, you made me worry. Now, haven't we also said that to our kids? Now, intellectually, we know. And we'll even tell our kids, nobody makes somebody else worry. You make yourself worry. Circumstances bring out something that's broken in us. They don't make circumstances. And many of us, we know our kids are going to be in therapy someday because of things that came out of our mouth that we go, oh, I shouldn't have said that, which is why forgiveness is so powerful. And the good news is if you're beating yourself up over mistakes you've made, and maybe your kids are all grown, maybe they're in their 30s or 40s or 50s now, and you're saying, boy, I wish I could go back. You know the great news about what God delivers you from? God delivers you from mistakes. He separates you from that. He forgives you from that. And Mary, here she is accusing Jesus. She's accusing God. God, you did this to me. You made me worry. How could you have done this? You personalized it all. And oftentimes, that's what I do with God. I look back in my life. At times, I shook my fist at God and said, God, why'd you do this? And how could you do this? Many of the things I see my kids doing to me, and it's so irritating, are the very things I've done to God. And God says, that's the kind of stuff I can forgive and deliver you from. That's the kind of stuff. In fact, I remember giving a speech to my son the other day. It was the don't lie speech. Do you know the don't lie speech? So I was going into the don't lie speech. Now you should why did you lie? Because it was going to get me out of trouble? Yes, that's no good. No, don't lie. Lying is bad. And lying, well, he knew lying was wrong. I finished this whole speech and I said, now don't ever lie ever again. And it dawned on me. That's not going to work. I mean, seriously, do I really believe he's never going to lie again? Not really. And I said, you know what? And I paused there for a second. I said, you know what, Jim? Can I tell you something? Daddy lied last week. I said, I was meeting with somebody at the church, asking them if they'd be interested in being a leader of the church. And they had heard in one of my messages at 9:15 that I was trying to only drink one Coke a week. And we showed up to lunch, and I went to order this Coke, and the person said, wow, is that your one Coke a week, and you're going to have it with me? Man, I'm really honored.
It's my second one. I had one yesterday. Thanks for listening to the messages.
And at that moment, you know what I said? Yeah. You know, we all lie and do the wrong thing. And I said to Javen, Daddy does too. And when you get tempted, come, let me help you. Let's find forgiveness. Let's find deliverance from that. And then I said, you know what Daddy did? Daddy had to call that person up, email that person, and say, boy, this may seem like a silly thing. We're talking about character, but I need to ask forgiveness for this. You know, I think our kids will relate more to us being honest about the things we need to be delivered from than perfection. Because that's what God offers. He offers to deliver us from stuff, just the mistakes we make, the sins we make, the pride we have. Well, this third moment, that's what I'd like to end on. It's not just who God is and what he does, but what does God offer to us? What does God offer? And this is so powerful. You see, many of us, and I struggle with this all the time, many of us have somehow built our identity, our sense of self-worth, our sense of self-respect on this stool, this three-legged stool. It might be status, it might be our performance, or it might be our appearance. But our sense of self-worth comes from one of those legs. My status. You know, where am I in the company? How big is the company? How many employees do I have? What were my quarterly earnings? And my sense of identity and self-worth is really tied to that. In fact, I've talked to many people who've tried to retire, and they weren't able to retire because they got a retirement. And because their identity was so attached to who they were or what they did, retirement didn't take. They had money and they had time. But why didn't it take? Because when your identity is tied to status, and then you try and get rid of that thing that represents your status, your whole identity goes into a spiral. For others, it's performance. And this can be especially hard on Mother's Day. I know Mother's Day can be a real challenge. I had several friends who for years tried to get pregnant, and they weren't able to. And it was such a challenge. And in the culture of the day, if you couldn't have kids, I mean, you were nothing. You were nothing. And your ability to perform as a mom, compare yourself to other mothers or other grandmothers and who's doing what and what your kid's doing and perform, and let me tell you about this and let me show you all the pictures. Nothing wrong with any of that. But when that is tied to your identity, I had a couple for years, they struggled with infertility and going through that whole process and getting the shots and going to the shots and getting the shots. And it's hard enough just to go through that. But when you go through that and your identity as a woman is connected to your ability to have kids, well, it can just throw you for a spiral. It really can. In fact, I was at a small group recently here at Horizon. I had a guy who shared with us that he's been exploring his own faith. He said, you know, I built a career. I launched my kids. They're off doing well. And I've been coming here recently and just asking questions about my faith. And saying, what is my faith about? And what is the Bible about? What is God about? And what is he offering? Now, I explained last week. What I'm explaining now is that God is about forgiveness and wanting to be involved in our life. He really is. Status, performance, and appearance. Appearance. We think about our daughters and just when their identity is caught up in what they look like and comparing themselves to airbrush models and all these things. And God says, I've got a whole new way to think about identity. So your worth as a mom is not about all the things you've done wrong and minimizing that list. I've got a whole new way I want to offer for you to find identity. A whole new way for your daughters and your sons and a whole new way to think about what you're worth. And here it is in this third moment. In Matthew chapter 12, Mary and Jesus' brothers are not happy with him. In fact, they're ticked off at Jesus. Because he's going around telling people that he's God. He's telling people he's going to die and be raised in 3 days. And this is not going over real well in the community. And their status in the community is going down.
Did you know your son is going around telling people that he's the Son of God? Isn't he like Joseph's son?
Their status is going down. And so Mary and the brothers say, we got to do something. We got to get together and tell Jesus to quiet down, pipe down. Come on now. You're destroying our relationship. You got to, Jesus, calm down. Just talk about goodness and love. Don't talk about this crazy talk. So here's what happens. They show up. While he was still talking to the multitudes, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. One said to him, hey, look, is one of his disciples. Hey, Jesus, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he answered, and he said to one who told him, here's what Jesus says. Who is my mother? And who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Now, he's not dissing his family here. He's saying that there is a way of finding worth that's not associated with your earthly family. Many of us had families that did a great job, and we go, thank you, and we honor them. Others of us came from families that didn't do necessarily as well of a job. And our sense of who we are and victimization or what happened or what should have happened or what happened to us, it's all connected to you wouldn't believe what my parents did or didn't do, and we don't honor them. And God says, I got a whole new way of you find identity. It's not your status. It's not your performance. Your real identity isn't even about your appearance. It can be about how God sees you. Anyone who does the will of my Father, well, what is the will of his Father? So cool. When you realize that you make mistakes, the Bible calls it sin. And when you ask God to deliver you from your sin, he separates you from your sin. You are no longer your sin. You're no longer what you've done. You're no longer what's been done to you. And your identity now is that the God of the universe, knowing all your secrets, knowing all your mistakes, knowing all the things you should have done better, he has forgiven you from all of that. And he sees you as pure and beautiful and without blemish. It doesn't matter what your culture says about your status. It doesn't matter what your job says about your status and your performance. It doesn't matter about whether or not your kids are actually obeying or not obeying. Because imagine putting your identity in your teenager's ability to obey you. I mean, you talk about a wishy-washy. God says you can know that the God of the universe forgives you and loves you. In fact, we had a group of women who have been studying through the book of James. And as they've been going through the book of James, there was several who came and shared with me what God's been doing in their hearts. And as they're beginning to incorporate this idea that who I am and my self-worth and who I am, what God offers me, is seeing myself in a whole new way. A way that's not in the grind of trying to live up to other people's expectations, even living up to my own expectation. I'm beginning to learn to see myself the way God offers, which is God gives me identity in how he sees me as his mother, as his brother, as his son, and his daughter. And we had several women in that group just saying, it has been so powerful. And we had several men come up and say, what are you doing to my wife? Because something good's happening here. I don't know what it is, but keep it up. Because what we're about at Horizon is about transformation, life change. In fact, I'm going to invite the band to come out. Because one of the things that is so great about being part of a community church is that as a community, we get to come together and we get to help each other out. We've all got stuff that we need to be delivered from. We've all got a journey we're on and questions we're asking and struggles we have. But here on Mother's Day, let's just remember Mary made some mistakes and God delivered her. And if he can deliver her, he can deliver you. And God can offer you a powerful picture of who you are, washed clean, when you ask him to separate you and deliver you from your mistakes. This next song is called The Music of My Heart. It again is our gift to you as moms. And actually, on your way out today, we're going to give you a flower, too, for all the women who are here to just celebrate motherhood. Maybe you've sent in pictures of your wives, of your moms, and we want to celebrate moms here in this final moment and just say thank you for everything you do and thank you for everything God has done through you.
Well, again, thank you so much for spending your Mother's Day with us. We do want to give a special gift to all the women on your way out if you want to grab a flower. And I want to invite you back for two things. We have a baptism celebration to hear some of the stories of people on their journey. That's coming up this Saturday. We invite you to be part of that. And also a brand new series starts next week called Let's Be Rational, An Intellectual Pursuit of God. We're going to be looking for next 6 weeks at questions like, is there a God? Is he good? What's he like? Why does he allow evil and suffering in the world? Does evolution discredit God? Does science confirm God? And next week, Don Byerly, who is a skeptic, who is an explorer up in the Arctic and a scientist, is going to talk about his journey from skepticism, the questions he had about science, about the Bible, about philosophy, and the journey he made. He's going to be speaking at both services. I invite you to be part of that and invite a friend. Thanks so much. Happy Mother's Day. See you next week.